Chapter 63. I had been looking, yesternight, through the famous dance of death, apostrophe, and today the grim old woodcuts arose in my mind with the new significance of a ghastly monotony, not to be found in the original. The weird skeleton rattled along the streets before me, and struck fiercely, but it was never at the pains of assuming a disguise. It played on no dulcimer here, was crowned with no flowers, waved no plume, minced in no flowing robe or train, lifted no wine cup, sat at no feast, cast no dice, counted no gold. It was simply a bare, gaunt, famished skeleton, slaying his way along the borders of Ratcliffe and Stepney, eastward of London, and giving on the impure river, were the scene of this uncompromising dance of death, upon a drizzling November day. A squalid maze of streets, courts, and alleys of miserable houses, let out in single rooms. A wilderness of dirt, rags, and hunger. A mud desert, chiefly inhabited by a tribe from whom employment has departed, or to whom it comes, but fitfully and rarely. They are not skilled mechanics in any wise. They are but laborers, dock laborers, waterside laborers, coal porters, ballast heavers, such like hewers of wood and drawers of water. But they have come into existence, and they propagate their wretched race. One grisly joke alone, method, the skeleton seemed to play off here. It had stuck election bills on the walls, which the wind and rain had deteriorated into suitable rags. It had even summed up the state of the poll, in chalk, on the shutters of one ruined house. It adjured the free and independent starvers to vote for this man and vote for that man, not to plump, as they valued the state of parties and the national prosperity both of great importance to them, I think, but, by returning this man and that man, each not without the other, to compound a glorious and immortal whole. Surely the skeleton is nowhere more cruelly ironical in the original monkish idea. Pondering in my mind the far-seeing schemes of this man and that man, and of the public blessing called party, for staying the degeneracy, physical and moral, of many thousands, who shall say how many? Of the English race, for devising employment useful to the community for those who want but to work and live, for equalizing rates, cultivating waste lands, facilitating emigration, and, above all things, saving and utilizing the oncoming generations, and thereby changing ever-growing national weakness into strength. Pondering in my mind, I say, these hopeful exertions, I turned down a narrow street, to look into a house or two. It was a dark street with a dead wall on one side. Nearly all the outer doors of the houses stood open. I took the first entry, and knocked at a parlor door. Might I come in? I might, if I placed, sir. The woman of the room, Irish, had picked up some long strips of wood, about some wharf or barge, and they had just now been thrust into the otherwise empty grate to make two iron pots boil. There was some fish in one, and there were some potatoes in the other. The flare of the burning wood enabled me to see a table, and a broken chair or so, and some old cheap crockery ornaments about the chimney piece. It was not until I had spoken with the woman a few minutes, that I saw a horrible brown heap on the floor in a corner, which, but for previous experience in this dismal wise, I might not have suspected to be the bed. Apostrophe, there was something thrown upon it, and I asked what that was. "'Tis the poor crather that stays here, sir, and 'tis very bad she is, and 'tis very bad she's been this long time, and 'tis better she'll never be, and 'tis sleep she does all day, and 'tis wake she does all night, and 'tis the lead, sir. Apostrophe, the what? Apostrophe, apostrophe, the lead, sir. Sure 'tis the lead mills, where the women gets took on at 18 pence a day, sir, when they makes application early enough, and is lucky and wanted. And 'tis lead pison she is, sir, and some of them gets lead pison soon, and some of them gets lead pison later, and some, but not many, neither, and 'tis all according to the constitution, sir, and some constitutions is strong, and some is weak. And her constitution is lead pisoned, bad as can be, sir, and her brain is coming out at her ear, and it hurts her dreadful, and that's what it is, and neither no more, and neither no less, sir. Apostrophe, the sick young woman moaning here, the speaker bent over her, took a bandage from her head, and threw open a back door, to let in the daylight upon it, from the smallest, and most miserable backyard I ever saw. That's what comes from her, sir, being lead poisoned, and it comes from her night and day, the poor, sick crather, and the pain of it is dreadful. And God he knows, that my husband has walked the streets these 4 days, being a laborer, and is walking them now, and is ready to work, and no work for him, and no fire, and no food but the bit in the pot, and no more than 10 shillings in a fortnight. God be good to us. And it is poor we are, and dark it is and good it is indeed. Apostrophe, knowing that I could compensate myself thereafter for my self-denial, if I saw fit, I had resolved that I would give nothing in the course of these visits. I did this to try the people. I may state at once that my closest observation could not detect any indication whatever of an expectation that I would give money. They were grateful to be talked to about their miserable affairs, and sympathy was plainly a comfort to them. But they neither asked for money in any case, nor showed the least trace of surprise or disappointment or resentment at my giving none. The woman's married daughter had by this time come down from her room on the floor above, to join in the conversation. She herself had been to the lead mills very early that morning to be took on, apostrophe, but had not succeeded. She had 4 children. And her husband, also a waterside laborer, and then out seeking work, seemed in no better case as to finding it than her father. She was English, and by nature, of a buxom figure and cheerful. Both in her poor dress and in her mother's there was an effort to keep up some appearance of neatness. She knew all about the sufferings of the unfortunate invalid, and all about the lead poisoning, and how the symptoms came on, and how they grew, having often seen them. The very smell when you stood inside the door of the works was enough to knock you down, she said. Yet she was going back again to get took on. Apostrophe, what could she do? Better be ulcerated and paralyzed for 18 pence a day, while it lasted, than see the children starve. A dark and squalid cupboard in this room, touching the back door and all manner of offense, had been for some time the sleeping place of the sick young woman. But the nights being now wintry, and the blankets and coverlets gone to the leaving shop, apostrophe, she lay all night, where she lay all day, and was lying then. The woman of the room, her husband, this most miserable patient, and 2 others, lay on the one brown heap together for warmth. God bless you, sir, and thank you. Apostrophe, apostrophe, were the parting words from these people, gratefully spoken to, with which I left this place. Some streets away, I tapped at another parlor door on another ground floor. Looking in, I found a man, his wife, and 4 children. Sitting at a washing stool by way of table, at their dinner of bread and infused tea leaves. There was a very scanty cinderous fire in the grate by which they sat, and there was a tent bedstead in the room with a bed upon it and a coverlet. The man did not rise when I went in, nor during my stay, but civilly inclined his head on my pulling off my hat, and, in answer to my inquiry, whether I might ask him a question or two, said, "Certainly." Apostrophe, there being a window at each end of this room, back and front, it might have been ventilated, but it was shut up tight, to keep the cold out, and was very sickening. The wife, an intelligent, quick woman, rose and stood at her husband's elbow, and he glanced up at her, as if for help. It soon appeared that he was rather deaf. He was a slow, simple fellow of about 30. What was he by trade? Apostrophe, apostrophe, gentleman asks, what are you by trade, John? Apostrophe, apostrophe, I am a boilermaker. Apostrophe, looking about him with an exceedingly perplexed air, as if for a boiler that had unaccountably vanished. He ain't a mechanic, you understand, sir, apostrophe, the wife put in. He's only a laborer. Apostrophe, are you in work? Apostrophe, apostrophe, he looked up at his wife again. Gentleman says, are you in work, John? Apostrophe, apostrophe, in work. Apostrophe, apostrophe, cried this forlorn boilermaker, staring aghast at his wife, and then working his vision's way very slowly round to me. Lord, no. Apostrophe, apostrophe, ah, he ain't indeed. Apostrophe, apostrophe, said the poor woman, shaking her head, as she looked at the four children in succession, and then at him. Work. Apostrophe, apostrophe, said the boilermaker, still seeking that evaporated boiler, first in my countenance, then in the air, and then in the features of his second son at his knee. I wish I was in work. I haven't had more than a day's work to do this 3 weeks. Apostrophe, how have you lived? Apostrophe, apostrophe, a faint gleam of admiration lighted up the face of the would-be boilermaker, as he stretched out the short sleeve of his threadbare canvas jacket, and replied, pointing her out, on the work of the wife. Apostrophe, I forget where boilermaking had gone to, or where he supposed it had gone to, but he added some resigned information on that head, coupled with an expression of his belief that it was never coming back. The cheery helpfulness of the wife was very remarkable. She did slop work, made pea jackets. She produced the pea jacket then in hand, and spread it out upon the bed, the only piece of furniture in the room on which to spread it. She showed how much of it she made, and how much was afterwards finished off by the machine. According to her calculation at the moment, deducting what her trimming cost her, she got for making a pea jacket 10 pence halfpenny, and she could make one in something less than 2 days. But, you see, it come to her through two hands, and of course it didn't come through the second hand for nothing. Why did it come through the second hand at all? Why, this way. The second hand took the risk of the given out work, you see. If she had money enough to pay the security deposit, call it £2, she could get the work from the first hand, and so the second would not have to be deducted for. But, having no money at all, the second hand come in, and took its profit, and so the whole work down to 10 pence halfpenny. Having explained all this with great intelligence, even with some little pride, and without a whine or murmur, she folded her work again, sat down by her husband's side at the washing stool, and resumed her dinner of dry bread. Mean as the meal was, on the bare board, with its old galley pots for cups, and what not other sordid makeshifts. Shabby as the woman was in dress, and toning done towards the bosjesmane color, with want of nutriment and washing, there was positively a dignity in her, as the family anchor just holding the poor shipwrecked boilermaker's bark. When I left the room, the boilermaker's eyes were slowly turned towards her, as if his last hope of ever again seeing that vanished boiler lay in her direction. These people had never applied for parish relief but once, and that was when the husband met with a disabling accident at his work. Not many doors from here, I went into a room on the first floor. The woman apologized for its being in an untidy mess. Apostrophe, the day was Saturday, and she was boiling the children's clothes in a saucepan on the hearth. There was nothing else into which she could have put them. There was no crockery, or tinware, or tub, or bucket. There was an old galley pot or two, and there was a broken bottle or so, and there were some broken boxes for seats. The last small scraping of coals left was raked together in a corner of the floor. There were some racks in an open cupboard, also on the floor. In a corner of the room was a crazy old French bedstead, with a man lying on his back upon it in a ragged pilot jacket and rough oilskin fantail hat. The room was perfectly black. It was difficult to believe, at first, that it was not purposely colored black, the walls were so begrimed. As I stood opposite the woman boiling the children's clothes, she had not even a piece of soap to wash them with, and apologizing for her occupation, I could take in all these things without appearing to notice them, and could even correct my inventory. I had missed, at the first glance, some half a pound of bread in the otherwise empty safe, An old red ragged crinoline hanging on the handle of the door by which I had entered, and certain fragments of rusty iron scattered on the floor, which looked like broken tools and a piece of stovepipe. A child stood looking on. On the box nearest to the fire sat two younger children, one a delicate and pretty little creature, whom the other sometimes kissed. This woman, like the last, was woefully shabby, and was degenerating to the Bosjesman complexion. But her figure, and the ghost of a certain vivacity about her, and the specter of a dimple in her cheek, carried my memory strangely back to the old days of the Adelphi Theatre, London, when Mrs. Fitzwilliam was the friend of Victorin. May I ask you what your husband is? He's a coal porter, sir, with a glance and a sigh towards the bed. Is he out of work? Oh, yes, sir. And works at all times very, very scanty with him, and now he's laid up. It's my legs, said the man upon the bed. I'll unroll 'em. And immediately began. Have you any older children? I have a daughter that does the needlework, and I have a son that does what he can. She's at her work now, and he's trying for work. Do they live here? They sleep here. They can't afford to pay more rent, and so they come here at night. The rent is very hard upon us. It's rose upon us too now, sixpence a week, on account of these new changes in the law about the rates. We are a week behind. The landlord's been shaking and rattling at that door frightfully. He says he'll turn us out. I don't know what's to come of it. The man upon the bed ruefully interposed. Here's my legs. The skin's broke, besides the swelling. I have had a many kicks, working, one way and another. He looked at his legs, which were much discolored and misshapen, for a while, and then appearing to remember that they were not popular with his family, rolled them up again, as if they were something in the nature of maps, or plans that were not wanted to be referred to, lay hopelessly down on his back once more with his fantail hat over his face, and stirred not. Do your eldest son and daughter sleep in that cupboard? Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.